Welcome to Rethink Retail, the show where we dive into the stories and strategies behind some of the most successful brands on the planet. From brick-and-mortar giants to e-commerce disruptors, we uncover the secrets to their success and deliver the keys to true retail transformation. So ask yourself, are you ready to rethink retail? The future of retail starts now.
Welcome to Retail Therapy. Retail Therapy is a Retail Cloud Alliance podcast, and we are excited to be recording live from Shop Talk this episode. My name is Andrea Lay, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleagues of the Rethink Retail Top Retail Experts Group, Michael, Lisa, and Neil. And I'll let each of them introduce themselves as well. I'm Andrea, founder of the Alum Group. We are a boutique education company on digital commerce topics.
I'm Michael Klein. Hi, everybody. I'm the founder and principal of Klein Ford Retail Consulting, and I'm working primarily with tech companies, helping them do a better job of communicating to the industry through thought leadership and improved content.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lisa Amlani, and I am the principal and co-founder of Retail Strategy Group and The Merchant Life. And I work with brands and retailers on increasing profitability and improving organizational effectiveness.
Hi, everyone. My name is Neil Saunders. I'm managing director of Global Data, and we work with retailers to help them understand consumers and the market and how those things are evolving.
Great. Well, here today, we're going to be talking about some up-and-coming and established sporting goods brands. So what's happening in the space and, you know, who we're really excited about from a technology perspective, from a strategy perspective. So anyone interested in kicking us off with maybe some trends that you're seeing in the space right now?
I would love to kick us off. So I've done some work with a very small $52 billion brand out of Portland. I'm sure you can guess who they are. And I think when I think about this brand and how much of the market share they have, I think they're really struggling to get closer to the customer when it comes to certain sports. And the way that they've changed the way they work now, instead of looking at sport, they're, you know, by gender so that they have less redundancy across product creation, et cetera. I think now they're really feeling a little bit nervous, especially with On Running, taking market share. They're really understanding their customer. And of course, the Deckers brands, I mean, they're disruptive, but they're actually really understanding what the customer wants at the right time, at the right price.
Any other trends that folks are seeing or want to comment on?
Well, when I think about the space, there's certain aspects of sporting goods, sport, fitness that I think are very conducive to this idea of direct-to-consumer. We certainly know that Nike made a big pitch and play to, you know, downsize their resellers, go more direct-to-consumer. But the idea of partnerships, you've got folks like New Balance doing partnerships with Clutch, Lululemon's doing partnerships with Peloton, and then also what's happening in their physical locations for experiences. Walk down Fifth Avenue and you hit Nike, you hit Puma, you hit Adidas, and they all are trying to do something quite experiential so that it's not just selling another pair of shoes or another pair of trainers or sweatpants or whatever it may be. So I think that there's kind of gold here that they need to mine because of the huge opportunity they have based on the nature of the category. And I continue to see great things happening with some of them. When I was at NRF and I toured those stores, I actually thought Puma probably had the best experience of them, even though they had a smaller footprint. And everybody always talks about the Nike Lab and the Nike store, and it's cool, but I thought there was a lot more engagement from what I saw in the Puma store. So it's just some things I've been thinking about when I think about this space, and that they do have some benefits by the nature of their product, the veracity that we all love those brands and we identify with one brand in particular. I've not yet bought a pair, but you mentioned On Running.
Oh, yeah.
But people also, I don't own a pair of Hokas, but people that own them tend to they love Hokas. And it's a brand I'm going to check out myself someday.
I love what you were just saying, Michael, because I think that the thing that I'm observing across the brands is now that some of the discretionary spending is down, that a lot of them are struggling with loyalty and lookalikes and, you know, maybe figuring out ways to get the shopper to buy the real deal. And that's something, like, I don't know if you guys saw Aloe, I think it was Aloe Yoga did a thing where if you bought the lookalike,
yeah,
they did a day where you could come in and trade it for the real deal. So really, I think what's interesting is what these some of these brands are doing to try to drive loyalty. And I think the in-store retail experiences are super interesting for that. You know, I have three teenagers and one of them's like very passionate about sneaker culture. And so we spent a lot of time in that New York, well, in the Adidas store, but also in the Nike store. And, you know, that was like the main thing my son wanted to do when we went to New York was go to that flagship. But also with what Nike's doing with the app and taking everything D2C and trying to establish that direct relationship with the consumer and giving you deals and offers if you're part of that community. But like, I think it's just interesting how they're all trying to like really grab onto that loyalty because that's a challenge area right now.
I'd love to actually ask Neil about this. What happens with wholesale? Because the brands don't have as much control over what's happening to department stores. I know you talk about that a lot. I'd love to get your insight on that part.
Well, I think it's a really interesting point because I think there is an eternal conflict between whether you want to be D2C or whether you want to be wholesale. And I think a lot of brands have fluctuated because Nike went on this big push to be D2C. And I don't think it really worked for them too well. I think that it's worked to an extent, but I think they've also realized they need to be in other places where the consumer shops. It may not be in Macy's or that kind of department store, but they certainly need to be in exporting goods in a very significant way. Whereas you look at On Running, they've gone in the opposite direction. They built, you know, a pretty good D2C business and they had a pretty good wholesale business. But now their focus is, okay, well, the brand's out there. It's well known. It's been growing fantastically. But we want the experience. As you said, Andrea, they want to create the loyalty through experience. So they're really focused on building out their own stores. So I think all these brands at sort of different points in the life cycle. But for me, the key thing is, especially in this constrained consumer market, you've got to really be where your customer is to a certain extent. And it's often not D2C or wholesale. It's kind of both. But the question is, how do you blend both of them when sometimes very different people shop in those channels and there are different dynamics? So it's a critical point.
Yeah. And I think today we are looking at a lot more KPIs to show how a brand is successful. Where, you know, engagement really comes into play. Where are customers spending their time on social? Are they on TikTok shop? How do you get them to shop from you versus Shein or Temu or Amazon for that matter? And so I think it's not only about loyalty, but it's almost about clienteling. Like, how do we get back to that focus on the customer, keeping that customer in focus in everything we do, from product design to merchandising to assortment planning to wholesaling, and also to selling directly to your customer.
I think that's a really great point. In fact, in one of the sessions this morning, I don't know if you guys heard Maria Renz. She's the VP of e-commerce for Google and then in the main stage. And she said something about building confidence with the consumers about serving the right product in the right context with the right level of detail. So it's kind of that right time, right place, you know, right shopper. And like they talked about some of the things that they're doing there. But yeah, I think most brands have an area of improvement of just like focusing more on the shopper and where they're at. My lens is a little bit more on the digital commerce side. And we hear brands talk a lot about, you know, channels and, you know, setting specific goals for specific channels and being digital first and all these things. But it's really about like making sure that we have a stronghold on the digital discovery for the shopper, but letting the shopper transact where they're going to transact, right? Like you said, is it Neil said, deal D2C? Is it in, you know, their favorite retailer? Is it online? But making sure like you can connect all those dots. I think one of the things Nike seems like they've really been challenged with, at least looking at their earnings, is now they have to own all that inventory.
Oh, yes.
Right? Like they don't get to just like sell it to someone and it's off their books and they wash their hands of it. They've now got to be really good at forecasting. They're going to do all of that business through their D2C channels. And I mean, that's it's a whole different set of capabilities and KPIs. And obviously a different financial impact.
Yeah. And I think from an organizational perspective, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. They weren't ready for that process to be innovated just yet. Because what's happening today, and especially with what happened post-COVID, is that the way that their merchandising teams are set up, they're decentralized. So they have a geo team in the regions, and then they have their global merchandising teams. They're really quite separated, and it's almost like they have handoff moments, but they're not capturing market feedback that's specific to those regions. And so when they are selling into their own stores or selling into wholesale, they're not actually closing that customer feedback loop, and they're left with even more excess than they started with. So I think that there's a lot of innovation to happen within process, but also getting that customer the right product at the right time, no matter how they shop, no matter what channel they shop in. Because for me as a customer, I shop every channel before I decide to actually make that purchase. And I most likely will make that purchase in store.
Blue Yonder is the world leader in retail digital supply chain transformations and omnichannel commerce fulfillment. Their end-to-end cognitive business platform enables retailers and logistics providers to best fulfill customer demand from planning through delivery. With Blue Yonder, you'll unify your data, supply chain, and retail commerce operations to unlock new business opportunities and drive automation, control, and orchestration to enable more profitable, sustainable business decisions. Blue Yonder, fulfill your potential. In retail, there is no shortage of data. But what if I told you that you've been overlooking the most valuable data of all, your contracts? Contracts define the commercial relationships that power retail. With contract intelligence from Icertis, you can structure and connect this critical business information so you can drive revenue, find savings, and reduce risk. To learn more, visit Icertis. That's Icertis.com.
Yeah, I would say somewhat in defense of Nike that they're faced with the same challenges that all of retail has. But I would give them credit as they've evolved, and even historically, that they do a pretty good job of distinguishing product for channel, where the $80 pair of shoes that I get at Nordstrom or $100, whatever it may be, are much different than the $150 pair that I get or the Nike ID that I design in my own. So I think that they do get a little bit of credit for being able to distinguish for a particular channel what the right product is. They're probably still trying to figure out what the balance is between the wholesale and the direct-to-consumer, and it's obviously affecting their earnings. But I think that they understand the levers. They're just, I think, trying to figure out the balance and what the right recipe is for them.
Yeah. I'd say that all brands are trying to figure it out.
Well, I think it's very interesting, your point, Liza, because I think, for me, Nike, I think, is a very complex company. It's become a very complex company. It's a very successful brand, but it sometimes seems to have a bit of a disjointed approach. And I think, I mean, I've looked in some of their new stores. There's a new store in Natick Mall in Massachusetts, which is one of their smaller stores. It's like the Well Collective type store. And I really struggle to understand what they're trying to do with it, because it looks like a bit of a Lululemon ripoff with leggings and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's got a bit of sneakers in there. And I sort of look in there, and to your point, Liz, it's just like, well, where was the customer in taking these steps? Because to me, it doesn't speak Nike. It jars with what, at least I think, of the brand. And I think that the company really needs to sort of pull everything back and really develop from a very customer-centric point of view, because it just seems that they're like experimenting with lots of different things. As you said, in different markets, there are slightly different strategies. And I think at the same time, as they're kind of maybe stumbling a little bit to find their feet, you've got all these other brands on Hoka coming up, and they're nibbling at market share. And of course, not that I think it's going to be massive in market share terms, but you've got Lululemon now doing, it's already done women's sneakers, but now doing men's sneakers. Which, okay, you can say it's not going to take masses of market share from Nike, because it's not, but it still nibbles. Yep. It nibbles at the edges. And I think, it adds up, and Nike can't afford to lose that focus. But I think, to your point, it has to an extent already. It needs to pull it back.
Yeah.
Well, and especially for the shopper that's buying, like, you know, less on the sneaker culture side, but more on the sort of everyday essentials. Like, you've got other companies like Amer Sports with Salomon and Brooks, and a lot of these outdoor brands that are starting, to your point, Neil, to nibble away at like their stronghold on the shopper, because they are doing more innovative things in store. You know, Brooks has the cool, you can like go in there and run, and the computer will show you, it'll give you a report on, you know, your gait and your, you know, your pronation and all these different things. And so some of those in-store things are seeming a little bit maybe more useful than the sneaker lab in the Nike store downtown. So we've got a couple more minutes. I'd love to hear if anyone, is there like a retailer or a brand on the sporting goods side that's doing something like really cool from a tech perspective in store that you're excited about? Maybe anyone comes to mind?
You know what? I'd say that I think that Adidas is still learning from everything that happened with Ye. But I will say the innovation around the product that they put out and how they used digital and 3D printing was so innovative, and how they're changing the way we think of overdevelopment and waste in materials when we're creating product. I really believe that Adidas could go further. They're not just about the Samba. They're not just about the Gazelles. There's so much more than that. And I really want them to take what they've learned instead of just kind of pushing it off to the side that, okay, this was a mistake. Let's learn from this, because you've innovated something incredible around material that can really be not only a lesson for other brands, but sharing that knowledge and changing the way we create product and getting faster to market because we're using digital with less waste, more sustainable materials and practices. I think that will be really interesting to see.
I'd go back to my comment about what I saw with Puma in the New York store and how they are trying to, you know, maintain some level of market share, because especially here in the U.S., they've been at least number 3-4 with New Balance also coming up. And I mentioned New Balance because it may not be highly technical, but I think from a customer satisfaction and logistics fulfillment, New Balance has nailed it.
Yep.
They've got micro-fulfillment across the country. I live in California. They're a New England-based brand. And I get a pair of shoes within a few days when I place an order with New Balance. So it's sometimes just the simple things and leveraging technology to just satisfy a customer in that moment. And I would call out New Balance as well, along with what I've seen from Puma.
I have tons of pairs of Nikes, and I just bought my first pair of New Balance 2 days ago. I'm wearing them today. Very happy with them.
Second person I've seen with those.
And honestly, I think that, you know, maybe I'll get a second pair.
There you go. Neil, anyone you're excited about right now?
Well, having been a bit critical of them, I do like Nike's approach to customization. I think they've done a great job on that, both from on the Nike side and the Converse side as well. I think that the customization is very easy to use. I think some of the back-end stuff, like the delivery time, et cetera, could be optimized perhaps. But I do like that they've taken that step and they've allowed that personalization. I think it's a good thing for engaging customers. And I think they've executed it well online and in some of their stores where you can see the personalization and engage with the product. So I think that's a good example of how you can just take the experience to a personal level.
Yeah. What about you, Andrea? We'll ask you the same question.
I think I'm pretty excited about Amer Sports. And I think, and they have Salomon and a lot of other sporting goods brands. And I think I'm most excited about them because of the way they manage to keep their channels really clean. And it's kind of a boring but important, you know, step in going to market that matters a lot to the shopper. And they're managing to sell D2C. They can sell on marketplaces. They sell wholesale, but it's still a pretty tight experience. And so you're not going to see a lot of like past season stuff. You're not going to see a lot of unauthorized sellers. You know, they keep a really tight hold on that. And I think it matters to the shopper. You know, when you go on a marketplace like Amazon, you search for Salomon, you're not going to get a bunch of junk. You know, that's why Nike left the platform. They had a trouble keeping that under control. And I think it's a real skill and an investment for a brand to do a nice job with that. And I think they're doing a really, really good job with all their brands.
Which is, I think it's very interesting because keeping the channels clean is exactly what none of us have mentioned as a good example. Under Armour have not done. And their market share is really poor because the channels are so blurred. The product has lost its focus, and obviously now they've just had another change of CEO, and the company just seems in a huge mess.
Yeah, I think they're confused.
They're
very confused.
They really watered down that brand. So,
yes.
And they brought Kevin back. I'd go back on Amer. Is I've not been to one, but has anyone been to a? Will they own Wilson?
Yes.
And Wilson is also now opening their own stores.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
Interestingly enough, I've not been to one.
There is one in New York.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't get to it, but it looks pretty cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Bandier is in that store too. I don't know.
Is that Lower Fifth Avenue, I think?
I can't remember.
Yeah, but I've seen pictures
of it. We digress.
It's one that I've wanted to see because you know, they have certain sporting goods that I still follow and use. So, yeah.
I think Under Armour is a whole other podcast, though.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That's a Harvard business.
We need to separate it, like wholesale, retail,
and the leadership. Yes, yes.
Leadership could be a podcast on its
leadership
own.
Leadership could be a podcast on
within
yes.
that.
Yes.
And then also the whole play between, you know, the NCAA and the MLB and all the sponsorships that they either get or don't get, and what can make or break some of these brands. Because at one time, Under Armour was very big, but Adidas and Nike have really taken over those sponsorships in those spaces.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks everyone for all of your insights and wisdom on the space. And if anyone listening is interested in learning more about any of the folks on the podcast today, it'll be in the podcast description. And thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to the Rethink Retail podcast. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. And if you're interested in being a guest on the show, apply at rethink.industries/podcast guest. That's rethink.industries/podcast guest. Follow us on Twitter at rethink_retail and show some love by subscribing on iTunes podcast app. Until next time.